This morning, though, we are preaching from the Bible as we do every single week, and we're in week two of our different worship series today, different in influence. Who can guess who has the most Instagram followers? Any ideas? Who do you reckon has got more Instagram followers than anyone else?
Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian is, I've got the top 10 here. Kim Kardashian comes in at number 8.
David Attenborough, he got lost in
there. David Attenborough, that was one. No, you're thinking of particular pictures. I tell you, as an aside, the most liked picture was, I think, Jennifer Aniston for a time. It is now currently a picture of an egg. And it was a campaign. Let's get this the most liked picture. Anyway, that's that. Kim Kardashian, for what it's worth, has a 250 million people following her, coming in at number 8. That's something like 5 times the population of the UK follow Kim. But only at number 8. Instagram itself is number 1, which I think is a bit of a con, really. They've got they obviously are the greatest influencers. 419 million people follow Instagram. But any other guesses for the actual... There's no other companies in the top 10. It's a bloke, actually. Cristiano Ronaldo is second only to Instagram himself with 336 million. I don't think you're that interested in the top 10, are you? So I won't read them all out. But these people with huge Instagram followings, they are known as influencers. They are influencers. And it's quite an interesting perspective on our society today, isn't it? That these people really with no expertise required whatsoever are the influencers of the people of the world today. People, they are literally called followers. That if you follow someone, you could... I wonder if it would be different if we called them disciples. And, you know, Kim Kardashian had 250 million disciples. They are disciples of sorts. We are discipled by those we follow, definitively and arguably. And the Bible says that Christians are not just followers, but also influencers. Now, you know, not to 250 million people, each one of us, but we are influencers of our own sorts. And like I say, we're preaching through the Sermon on the Mount for the foreseeable future. And we started that last week, how God's people are called to be different. And I think this is one series particularly that it's worth catching up on, and if you miss any week, it's worth keeping informed with each week. Last week, just as a little recap, we saw how God's people are called to be different. You could summarize the story of the Bible by saying that it is a story of God calling his own people and setting them apart from the rest of the world and saying, you live differently, you be different because you are different, you are my people. And we talked a bit about how we live in a post-Christian world now, which means that actually the world we live in is hugely influenced by the teachings on the Sermon on the Mount in some respect, and yet the world wants the kingdom without the king. And they want these ideas, but they've got no desire to follow Jesus or submit to him. And so some of it can seem familiar in the world we live in. But when you get to the core of it, that we're ultimately called to humbly submit to Jesus, it is very different. And we, as you may remember, bounced to the beat of Christ's drum, not our own. The way of the world is bounce to your own beat, you do what you want. Christians are called to submit to Jesus' beat and fall in line with one another as we do that. And so each week we're looking at how we are different in a certain area as we go through the Sermon on the Mount. This week we are different in influence. And we're in Matthew 5. I will put it up on the screen, but I'm not sure you're about to read it, to be honest. If you've got a Bible or a device, you know, with the Bible on it, then do grab it out. Matthew chapter 5. And I will read a little bit from what we looked at last week when we looked at the Beatitudes. I'll read from verse 3, as you look at what does it mean for us to be influencers? What are we saying when I say that? Matthew 5, or you, I don't know, maybe you can see that. But from verse 3, Jesus is speaking to his disciples and he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So, salt and light are these two pictures that Jesus gives and talks about. And he says to his people, you are salt and you are light. We're going to look at what is common between these two pictures, what's Jesus saying about both of them, and what they both show us. So both of them are saying, firstly, that the church and the world are distinct, are different. Much of what we are saying through this series. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world, Jesus says to his people. So he's saying salt and earth, light and world. That is an assumption that runs through this series, and that's the first thing that he's just cleared for us to identify in it. He's also saying that the world is a dark place that needs light. The light of the world. So it's in darkness. People like to talk about the Enlightenment, but I'm not sure it actually is the best word. It wasn't really when light shone into the darkness, because the world has no light of its own. And Jesus says to his church, you are light. You are the light of the world. And you are the salt of the earth. Salt, you know, we can say, well, light's a bit obvious, isn't it? We know what that means. We say, well, salt of the earth. You can think, well, that, what does that mean? He's talking in a day before fridges, which is hard for us to imagine, really, when you've got meat but no fridge to put it in. And salt is largely a preservative in that day, in that culture. That's the main thing that Jesus is saying. And he's saying, you're the salt of the earth, because the earth, the world apart from you, putrefies on its own, like meat that goes wrong. I have to use the word putrefies when there's an opportunity to do so. The meat, you leave it, we all know, right? You get some chicken out of the fridge. If you leave it out of the fridge, it's going to not take too long before it goes gross. And in that day, there were no fridges. Salt would resist the decay. And the world on its own is like a piece of meat that you take out of the fridge and leave it. It needs salt. And why is that? It's because I think in all people, we have a predisposition for me first. That's how we live and are brought up. Kids, if you've ever seen a kid, you know that's how children work. Me first. Who wants an ice cream first? No kid says, oh, why don't you give it to my brother or sister? They say, me, I want it first. Me first in every sense. And I think adults, we just get better at hiding it, really. I don't think we're any different. We just know that's socially unacceptable for us to be so outlandish and me first. And that's why the world is dark on its own, it putrefies on its own. The other thing in common with both these pictures is Jesus is saying that the church should make a difference in the world. The church should be salty, should make a difference to the decay of the meat. The church should shine a light into the darkness, such that outside of the church doing that, there is a difference. Light in the darkness with salt in the meat. And that's in a big way, actually. It's not just, oh yeah, we contribute a little bit. It's not what Jesus is saying to his people. God, in his common grace, has given the state and given the home. I think probably the two biggest institutions that serve this world that God has gifted, they're the most, that they make a difference, those two things. When the state is operating well, it helps the world, it serves the world. When the family home is loved and respected and working, and the sense of parents and children, then that serves the world. But as good as those gifts are, the main way that God has blessed the world is through the church, is to give the church. That is the main restraint against darkness and decay in this world, are his redeemed people. So Jesus got a big vision for the church, a big idea of the value of his people and the difference they make. Bigger than the government, bigger than the home or the family life. And we hear this now and think, yeah, light of the world, it just, we know that. It's hard for us to remove ourselves from it. You need to remember, Jesus, when he first says this, he's talking to a proper ragtag bunch of disciples who you know, some fishermen, some uneducated men, very small, very unimportant, not a quarter of a billion people, right? Not got the following of Kim Kardashian at this point. He's talking to these few uneducated men, and they actually did change the world. Historically and arguably, this group of people changed the world. They really were the light of the world, salt of the earth, of what grew from these pretty unimpressive people. God did that, such that we now live in a post-Christian world because of what God did in this small bunch of people. So we are supposed to have a big vision of how the church is different from the world and is a great blessing and serves the world well. How, though? How are we different in influence as God's people? And it's a big question. What, it all hinges on this, really. What do we do? How do we make a difference? Really, we make a difference by being different. We make a difference in the world, not by going along with it. It does anything, doesn't change anything. We make a difference by being different. So actually, Jesus is saying influence is conditional here on being salty and bright lights. It's not, otherwise salt is useless, he says. If you're not salty salt, then we just throw you out and we just walk over you. There's no good. And if you cover up a light, it's pointless if it's not shining brightly. So if we are not different, if we're not salty and bright, we're not influence. We're not influencers. So how are we salty and bright then? How do we make sure we are? We're different in influence ultimately because we are different in character, as we looked at last week. That's why it's helpful to reread the Beatitudes. It's as we live those out, our character will be deeply different. And as our character is different, we will also influence people and the world in a different way. The more we live out really the whole Sermon on the Mount and all that he calls his people to be, the more influence we have. We'll look at that a bit more in a moment. But fundamentally, it's as simple as that. As we resolve to beat to Jesus' drum, the world will be changed by doing that. So let's look at each one then. So that's what's in common. What does it mean to be salt that is salty? as opposed to salt that's no good for anything except to be trampled underfoot. I think it means salt that's salty is salt that bites, in a way. Jesus doesn't say, you're the sugar of the earth. You're the sweet honey of the earth. You are lovely and everyone will think you're lovely. You're lovely to taste in every sense. Actually, the reality is, in some sense, the gospel does hurt. It does add a bite. Now, it's good. It is good news, but it is offensive. It's God's judgment. God will judge the world for their sin, for our sin, and people, until they realize that there's a holy God in heaven, they're never going to understand grace. Part of knowing grace is knowing that we don't deserve it, knowing that there is just judgment for us apart from God's gracious and wonderful provision of his Son, who he has sent to die for us and cover every one of our sins. So like I say, the world is like meat, right? You take meat out of the fridge, if you leave it for a week, you don't come back to it and think, oh, surprise, that's gone rotten. What? I didn't expect that to happen. You expect it to happen. And if the world, Jesus says, is like meat, then there's a sense in which we shouldn't be surprised when we see it decaying, when we see it being not good and not right in the same way. But we should, as God's people, speak out against the decay. That doesn't mean we just say, well, that's how it is. Meat putrefies, the world goes rotten, but that's how it is. And it it might redefine marriage, it might cut the world, might cut foreign aid or something. And as God's people, we should be speaking out against things that we know are not good. When we see it, if you see some meat decaying, you act on it. As we see the world around us making foolish and wrong decisions, we act out and speak into it. You may have noticed, if you study the Bible, you'll realize we don't really fit politically anywhere. Now, I'm not saying who you should vote for in any sense, but I'm saying there are things that are on the right politically that Jesus has got no time for, and there are things on the left politically that Jesus has got no time for. We should speak out against evil, full stop. And we should also promote good and truth. And so salt bites, right, has a sting to it. I think it's hard partly because we don't have many good examples of people doing this, of speaking out in a humble and righteous way, which makes it difficult. But also, I think it's important, just because the world may react against someone speaking out in truth and condemn them and put them down and say how evil is this person, that doesn't mean that they are evil or doing it wrong. Jesus is very clear, blessed are you when people hurt you and insult you because of righteousness, because of me. Just because the world reacts against people speaking out and assault that bites does not mean that it's wrong. And also salt that preserves, as I've said. Salt stops decay. It doesn't just have a sting and a bite, but it changes society for the better. So it's not just we keep telling the world how they're doing things wrong, but we also do good for the world. Salt that preserves, being a salty people, means that we live out the truth that we are speaking out. We don't just say, no, this is wrong, the world is reacting. We also model it with our lives. We are those who help the poor and lowly. The Bible is so clear that God is a defender of the poor. You won't find in the Bible that God is a defender of the rich. He fights the cause of the oppressed and the lowly and those without, the fatherless and the widow and the orphan. And we, as God's people, should do likewise. We should take up the cause of the lowly and the oppressed. And it's all because of what we've received. It's all because of grace. Because we have received what we don't deserve in our lowly position, God himself in his riches came down for us and died for us. Because of his grace to us, we live out grace to those around us. And we are motivated to work for justice in this dark world. It should also work as a preventative. Maybe, again, more, that's what salt does. Where there's issues in the world, we don't just react, but actually we look to prevent oppression for the poor. We don't just help the poor, we try and stop people being oppressed in the first place. We look to change systems. When the church operates right, meat decays much slower. The world decays much slower. Sir Frederick Catherwood was a Christian MP, and he said this: to try to improve society is not worldliness, but love. To wash your hands of society is not love, but worldliness. If we are to love the world, we must try to improve society. Salt that bites. Salt that stings a little bit. What about bright light? What does it mean to be a light that's bright? Light that shines bright is noticeable. Firstly, Jesus is talking about a town on a hill or a city on a hill, most translations translate it. In those days, if there was a little city on a hill, and it was in a raised position, you'd be able to see it for miles around as a light shines in the darkness at night. You know how beacons of light, they used to warn of invaders by lighting a beacon and then another one way over there and they'd light, and that's how they'd communicate, was light shining in the darkness. Light that shines in the darkness is very noticeable. And being different in character makes us different in influence because it's noticeable. Because you stand out. To be honest, it seems to be getting easier than ever before. Well, certainly in my lifetime, to stand out as different. As the standards of the world just slip and fall around us. In a way, to just stand out and be a light that's bright, you just need to not be a jerk. You know, just don't be horrible. Don't be, you know, constantly berating other people. Give people the benefit of the doubt, and you'll stand out as different, and you'll look different. My old job was, you know, the classic office. Really, there was an office and a warehouse. And I'm not saying I was a saint, but to be honest, all I needed to do to be pretty radically different was to not lie. Just don't lie. And people, you stand out as different, where everyone else is pathological liars, really, and just willing to just say whatever they want in order to get their case. And I think many of you working in certain environments will know this. Just not lying makes one stand out a lot. To be honest, it doesn't always make people like you, because it's like, why don't you just say this? Just lie, and then you'll get the company out of this situation. You know, got some stock coming in, and it's late. Oh, I'll just tell them this. Well, that's not true, though, is it? And it sometimes won't make you comfortable and popular in the company, but it makes a big difference. Refusing to enter into gossip is hugely different to the way of the world. It's just mindless and thoughtless, the way the people of this world will talk about other people and give their opinion and perspective. If you just refuse to do that, then you're shining bright. You are a light that's bright in the darkness. It is very simply living out the Beatitudes such that ultimately we have a mindset of you first. So it's not me first. It's not, me. It's no, you first. We lay down our personal preferences and we live out totally different lives to those around us. And light that is bright is also light that reveals truth. You You can't see in the darkness. Did you know? You can't see what is before you. You can't see the truth. When a light shines bright, you can see what is true. You can see what is before you. So you know, if we managed to totally black out the room right now, we would still have some idea. We know that there are chairs around and there would still be things in this room, but we would not be able to see them. The world is in darkness. The truth is still there, right? The chairs are still there. The truth is there. They just can't see it. Light reveals what is the case, what reveals what is already true. We serve the lowly, right? So we are salt that preserves. We look to stop systems that cause oppression, and we do everything we can to serve the lowly. But we do need to understand that ultimately people need more than that. They need regeneration. People need the truth of the gospel. They need new life. Just every one of us who calls himself a Christian now, one day was lost and separate from God, needing comfort, needing hope. And God changed our eternities when he brought us into his kingdom. People need that to happen more than they need anything else, more than they need a free breakfast, more than they need other things sorted out in their lives. They need regeneration. And as the church shines brightly, it reveals the truth and it stands out as different. We tell them the gospel. So we do deeds. We do good deeds. We also use words. It's not enough. I don't buy it. People say, preach the gospel, use words if you need to. And you need to use words. You need to preach the truth. You need to reveal the truth. People are in darkness. They can't see the truth before them. And they need someone to shine brightly and tell them about it. That is the truth of the gospel that they need to hear. That there is a God in heaven who loves them. Despite their sin, God loves them. And he welcomes them into his family. They just need to acknowledge their sin, acknowledge that Jesus has paid for it, and come before them. We tell people about this. One thing we're going to do to help this, we're going to do Alpha. An Alpha course this term. Got a little video to talk about that.
I'm Tim.
I'm Joe.
I'm Katie.
I'm James, and we're the team that runs the Alpha course at Grace Church.
Now, we are doing Alpha online. We are going to do an Alpha course in person here at the Grace Centre this term. We've never been able to do an Alpha course here before because we kind of finished it all up and then before we got around to doing one, COVID came. So it's super exciting, an actual course in person. We're going to use the kitchen, will serve food, cook food here, have the tables out. It's going to be great. We weren't initially going to do this, but since we've kind of the last few months, just people have been increasingly asking us, do you do Alpha? I want to do it. And we, well, all right, we'll do it. We feel God is leading us into this. People are searching and seeking and trying to make sense of the world in the last 18 months. So we're going to do it. It's exciting. It's not the end of Alpha Online. God really served us through lockdown, through Alpha Online, and we'll probably do it again someday in the future. Who knows? This course may end up online. But you got it willing, it won't. But it's served us well. If you want to get involved, let us know. We're going to be starting it on Monday, the 11th of October. It'll be weekly on Monday evenings here. Let us know you want to come and help cook, help serve the food, help be on a table speaking to people about the gospel. And otherwise, stop telling your friends, invite people to our course here at the Grace Centre.
I love there's actually an audible gasp from the AV. All the video's broken. Yes, we're not doing Alpha Online. We are doing it in person. It is exciting. And it really is true. We had thought now we'll kind of just ease into this year. We probably won't do an Alpha. And just people are coming along and saying, you want to know more about the gospel? And even they know about Alpha. They're saying, do you do Alpha? That's what I want to know about. And you just think, well, okay, God, we'll do Alpha, and have this opportunity to tell people the truth and the light that they need to hear. Salt, that is salty. Light, that is bright. One other thing about salt is people often say salt in the wound is a phrase we use, isn't it? And we don't really use it right, I don't think, in that you might just say, you know, you've already lost the final and then it's salt in the wound to have to watch the other team get their trophy and all the rest, or whatever it might be. Salt in the wound, I think, initially people put salt in a wound to help the wound. So it stings, but there is also some reaction that helps to seal it, and it helps. So it hurts, but it is good. And again, I think in terms of the salt in the wound, that's kind of what we're saying. Sometimes we will hurt people, but it is for their good. Salt that's salty, light that's bright. Verse 16, end of our passage, says, "Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So it's make it public, right? Make people know that you're different. Make sure that they do. I thought one kind of semi-helpful way to earth that, like as we think out how that plays itself out, is to think, okay, here's a question. Should we then put our good deeds on Instagram or whatever? Should we post pictures of ourselves doing work for the kingdom so that people would see them and glorify our God? What does it mean that we live out and show people our good deeds? And I think this is just a helpful way to frame it. I mean, I'm not saying it's not the same as being on Instagram, you know, it's or even putting anything on there. I'm saying it's putting things on there that we might think, oh, look at what I'm doing, and then glorify God. And I think, for what it's worth, it's a good question. It's a good question to ask. I think we should question a lot of our social media practices. I'm not saying we come to any necessarily, you know, not saying we don't do any of it, but we should at least question it and not think, well, everyone else does it, so we do it. Hopefully you're getting through this series. That's kind of the opposite of the point, that we don't think in that way. I think the way to answer it, we have to think initially to understand what Jesus is saying. We have to think, what is our incentive as we do this, as we do our good deeds before others? To be salt that's salty, light that's bright, to be different in character. What is motivating us? What is our driver? And from the passage, I think our answer is threefold. Firstly, our incentive to do our good deeds before others is because that is the way that we will be blessed. So they are the Beatitudes, right? They're called that because they are talking about how we are blessed. My eye's going funny, as you may be able to tell. Contact lenses that play up. They are the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit and so on. We live that way. We live out the Beatitudes because that is the way that blesses us, actually. To live that way, well, this will serve you. This is the path to a fulfilled life. Do this, you'll be fulfilled. You'll be happy objectively. You will be blessed. So our motivation, in some senses, is for God's blessing on us. Great is your reward in heaven. Jesus is not ashamed to make that point. Secondly, though, as well, it is the way, as we live out different lives, as we are salt that's salty and light that's bright, that is the way that the world is best served. That is how we influence and serve the world. It is genuinely, we will have a better influence than if we had the millions of followers on Instagram or whatever, and we're doing something else, by just standing out, by living out the Sermon on the Mount. We are serving the world that we live in. We're shining a light into an otherwise dark world. We're preserving the meat that is otherwise rapidly decaying. Not being salty, not being bright, is to rob the world of that. It's an immense privilege. It's an immense privilege that we get to be part of the church, that this this thing that God is primarily using to serve this world. And we should think of it as such. We want to serve people, and we want them to know God. The way that we do that is to be salt that's salty and light that's bright, to be different in character. And thirdly, so that motivates us, it blesses us, it serves the world. And thirdly, crucially, it is the way that God is glorified, is for us to live differently. When we do it right, when we serve the world, live out this way, God is glorified, not us. It's not, people don't think, wow, that, Joe's amazing. I think God's amazing. When we are getting it right. And so our incentive and what motivates us matters crucially. Because, we all know, lots of people do good stuff to serve the poor. Lots of people in the world, Christians or not, do serve the poor well, and they do things that are good for society, genuinely. What makes the church different is that we don't just do it that we might be blessed, because we believe it's better to give than to receive. We don't just do it that the world would be blessed to help other people. We do it for God and for his glory. We do it so people see him in us, and they glorify him. You know, when Christians love sacrificially and humbly and serve the world, you know, don't you, that makes you think, wow, God is amazing. I love God. I love to read biographies of Christian men and women who have done great things for him, and I don't read them and think, that person's amazing. I mean, I'm humbled, but I really think, God, you're amazing. I want to serve you like this person has. I want you to be glorified in my life like this person has glorified you. We look at one another, and when you hear of someone serving someone else in the church or doing a thing in their community, in the Christian family and community that is the church, you think, God, that's great. I love you, God. So, Instagram then. How does it work? Should we then put our good deeds on Instagram? I think we all know. I'm not personally, now you may say differently, when someone puts a picture of themselves on Instagram doing a good deed, whatever it might be, clearing a garden or something, and a selfie of them doing that, I don't think, wow, God's great. I think, well done for tooting your own horn. Go you, you're amazing. There's a me-centeredness about that emphasis. There is an abundance. So we have to take this in weight with, we think, okay, do your good deeds for others so that God be glorified. There is a whole host of stuff that Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, as we'll see, where he says, Go into secret. When you pray, close the door. Go in a room and close the door. No one else needs to know that you're doing it. When you give, go out of your way to give in secret to make sure that people don't know. And we have to take those two things in balance. People, they see our good deeds and they glorify God when they know that we're not doing it for our own sake. And they generally, people can tell when that's the case. I think it's easy to spot, really, when someone is doing something for their own, popularity, that people think, oh, that person's lovely, and when someone is doing it for God's glory. So in short, I think no is the answer. Don't put your good deeds on Instagram if it's all about you, because it doesn't look that way. Now, as an aside, you might ask, and again, I think it's a good question, what about a church social media account then? How does that work? Is that different? And again, I think maybe the main thing to emphasise is that is a good question. We should be asking these questions and not just do it because that's what other people do, even other churches do, how that works. I'm very aware of the irony that you may be aware of, that yesterday Simon Taylor is putting something on the Grace Church Facebook group about how we cleared a garden together in Bognor, and how that was a great thing. And I think that's a good question, a good point. And I think, no, I don't want to feel defensive of Simon, but I think it's a closed Facebook group. I think there is a difference when a church does it and when an individual does it. I think churches can be guilty of going too far into their own brand, but I think largely when people see a church do something, they do think God is, they equate that with God, actually for ill or for good. When the church acts in a certain way, people will equate that with God. And so if the church is not living in a godly way, people will think less of God. And if they are, if the church is serving the community and loving people well, people will think more of God. And I think it is different. But equally, I'm open to discussion on it. I think it's good that we ask these questions. How do these things actually play out when Jesus says, glorify, do works, make other people see them, that God be glorified, and weigh that up with, or go and pray in secret. Our good deeds must be for God's glory. They must be for God's glory. Actually, Jesus has got pretty strong words for you if they're not. And it's not black and white, any of these questions, but that is the difference. What is our motivation, our incentive? So that we're blessed that the world is served and that God gets honour and praise. Jesus says in this passage that we, his people, are the salt of the earth and we are the light of the world, objectively. Now, we can be salt that's not salty and light that's not bright, but we are those two things. We must be salty and we must be bright. Collectively, we must be different, and individually, we must be those things. That means living out the Beatitudes. It means being different in character so that we are different in influence. Maybe Lou and Pete, do you want to come back up? We're going to sing again in a moment. Last week, I said, just as I do come into land, I said, when we talk about the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, you could translate them, I think I've got them up there, blessed. You could translate that word as happy. Now, it's not a subjective happiness, it's an objective happiness, that blessed. So happy are the poor in spirit, happy are those who mourn, and we looked through that. You know, you could also, I didn't say this last week, but some could say that the best translation of the word blessed, for us to understand it, might surprise us, but you could say it should be successful. Successful are the poor in spirit. Blessed people, Jesus is speaking, they were the successful people. Blessed people were those everyone wanted to be like. They were envied and emulated. They were the role models. And we'd probably say similarly today in our culture. But therefore, if you do read it like that, the Beatitudes are extra confusing. Successful are the poor. Successful are the meek. Successful are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Successful are the peacemakers. It makes sense for us to say blessed, but because the blessed are, you know, rich and strong, but then how can it be successful? Because that you'd expect it to say successful are the rich, right? Successful are the strong. These Beatitudes, ultimately, they are for us to live out, but ultimately they point to Christ, who has redefined what it means to be successful. Reimagined what that means. Before they point to us, as I said they do, they point to Jesus. So we, as those who have received his grace, we will be rich as kings, because he was a king who emptied himself of all of his riches and became poor. We will be comforted because he wept. and because he died for us, will inherit the earth. As it says, blessed are the meek, they'll inherit the earth. We will inherit the earth because Jesus became a weak and meek lamb who was led to the slaughter. We will be filled because he hungered and thirsted on the cross for us. He could have come as strong and rich and popular, but biblically speaking, he would have not been successful. In order to succeed, he needed to become poor and weak and persecuted so that we could inherit life. Only when we look at him can we do likewise. We cannot just live out the Beatitudes by pulling our socks up and trying to get on with it. It's only when we look at a man, look at what Jesus has done for us. He has lived this out perfectly on our behalf. Only when we're inspired and see that can we be different in character and therefore different in influence. Why don't we stand and we come to worship Jesus who has done it all for us as we look to be different. It's not just us working hard. We look at Jesus, see how he's done it for us, and we're humbled before him. Let me pray. Jesus, we worship you. We thank you for your sacrifice, that you were rich and yet you became poor. You were utterly fulfilled in the presence of your Father, and yet you emptied yourself and became one who mourns. You became meek for our sake. Jesus, would you give us eyes to look at you? Would we fix our eyes on you? And as we do that, we'd be different. We would stand out different in character and therefore different in influence. For your glory's sake, God, people would look at us and not think, wow, they're amazing. They'd think, God is amazing. Would you be glorified through our lives? We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.